The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Dad, Happy New Year.
Well, hello there, Tay. Happy New Year to you, too.
We made it. 2022.
That's a lot of twos in this year.
A lot of twos.
And
I hope it's just too good of a year.
Yeah, I know, because we've learned to be more cautious, because we thought when 2020 left, we were like, whew, glad that's over. Can't get any worse for 2021. Well, it did.
Yeah, it was like 2021 was worse, and it wasn't even like, I don't know. There was like the well, we're all in quarantine together kind of element to 2020 that was at least like people were baking banana bread, and that was cool. But like 2021 was like, a bunch of us are still in this, but then there's some people that are like, what's wrong with you? We're living our lives. And it was just, it was somehow just, I don't know.
Yeah, the wall grew higher, and I never thought there'd be a day where I would see an insurrection. I mean, you see you see that in third world countries, you know, and you know, you had the fall of the Berlin Wall and stuff like that. But I never thought I'd see an insurrection in America since the Civil War.
Well, we're coming up on the anniversary of that, huh? That's
yeah, that's tomorrow.
When you listen to that, that'll probably be yesterday, but that is tomorrow, or maybe the day up. Depends on
what it's tomorrow for us. Yeah, that's right.
Happy anniversary, insurrection on American soil. But hey, it's 2022. From the superstition, New Year superstition episode that we did year before last, I ate my 12 grapes at midnight, so I can't be that bad. I ate 12 grapes.
Well, I stayed awake.
That's good.
Yeah, that was pretty good luck, I guess. Yeah. I didn't fall asleep before midnight. Not too bad for an old dude.
One of those bad luck things.
Yeah.
I ate some lentils because they're shaped like coins. You're supposed to do that. I ate some colored greens for money.
Yeah.
You're supposed to wear either red, yellow, or green underwear. They all represent different things, but the only color that I had clean, they were red, but they had little alligators on them, but I think they still counted. That's red and green, right?
What if you weren't wearing any underwear? What does that do to you?
It's bad luck for your pants. That stinky butt jeans.
Okay, it's a good thing we did laundry the next day.
Okay. Say no more, please. But hey, another drinking tradition, or rather not drinking tradition, that a lot of people are embracing this month is, of course, Sober January.
Sober January. Oh, no. Yeah, tell me it's not so.
Well, I mean, I used to do it religiously every year. It was a big thing in the bar industry. I think it was kind of a tie. We all did it together. It was sort of that thing, like, you know, especially when you work in bars, I think you just start having to work parties in, like, October for Halloween, and it just goes on through, so you just get more and more saturated with alcohol until the New Year's. Everybody needs a month to just stop and reassess. But on my own in a pandemic, I'm like, no, I'm gonna do a damp January. A dry January. It's gonna be like 5-6 days a week of like no drinking, maybe like 1-2 days a week of like some drinking, but I'm not gonna go for the whole month full sobriety. It's if you are, congratulations, nothing wrong with that. If you never drink, nothing wrong with that. But if you're like me and you're like, maybe not this year, maybe next year, not there.
Well, I don't drink that much anyway. So it's not, you know, now it used to be something for me, but anymore, I might have a drink 1-3 days a month or something like that, but that's about it. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do think that's part of that for me too, is that like, just not working behind a bar, I don't drink as much as I used to when I was working. So it feels like less of a, I don't think I need to like completely reevaluate my relationship with alcohol for a month out of the year. I think I can just say, hey, resolutions, let's set some guidelines, but that's all right.
A lot of times for me, it comes down to, I'd like to have ice cream later. And I don't like eating ice cream after I've been drinking beer all night, so those two don't go together too well. So I think I'll hold off on drinking any beer, so I'll enjoy the ice cream later.
It's funny you said that after how many drinks I've seen you build on top of ice cream.
Well, that's true. I have built drinks on top of ice cream.
You like specifically combining alcohol and ice cream.
Oh, yeah. Grasshoppers are for, you know, the most recent example. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, whatever. But in any case, whether or not you're doing a dry January, or you do dry all the time, or you're doing a damp January, or you just drink it on through it, I always like to at least do one episode this month where we talk about something alcohol adjacent that's not necessarily alcoholic. And I thought we've definitely touched on this in previous dry January episodes, just other episodes in general, but I thought we could devote a whole episode to it. That is what I want to talk to you about today, which is kombucha.
Kombucha.
Yes. Have you ever had kombucha, Dad?
Never.
No?
I don't even think I heard of it till not that long ago. Yeah. It had a green leaf floating in it or something, or seaweed in it or something. So I thought kombucha was something made from seaweed or something.
It's funny you would say that. I'll explain why in a minute. But that stuff that's floating in it is not seaweed. It's become a thing, I think, in the last decade. It's kind of associated with, like, you know, hipster culture or whatever here in America, which is a little short-selling its history. It's, first off, it's not at all American, and it has like a long-reaching history dating back into like the BCs, which is cool. But
well, I know, and a lot of people would try to tell you about great health benefits, that you should drink it regularly because of all the great health benefits from it and everything. But I don't know, I've never seen anything about it medically, or anything, any studies that backed it up that said we should all drink kombucha. So
no, that's one thing that I'm not really going to hit hard. By and large, the research suggests that there's not anything overwhelmingly healthy about kombucha. That's not to say it's not healthy. You know, it can be, as compared to like other soft drinks, you know, other like sweetened tea beverages, it generally is a little like, it's lower in sugar. It's got some probiotics. It can be very refreshing, very hydrating. It's a great stand-in. If you want an alcoholic drink, you want something kind of fermented and funky, but you don't want to drink, kombucha is great for that. So I wouldn't qualify it as not a healthy beverage. I think it's absolutely a good choice. But most of the more extreme health benefits attached to it that people claim are not, there's no scientific backing to that. So, you know, I'm just not going to, that's not my area of expertise, but by and large, I won't sell it to you as a health beverage.
Well, it's kind of vinegary too, isn't it? Have that vinegar kind of bite to it that's like, that makes Switchel so good?
Absolutely, yes. I think if you like Switchel, I think there are types of kombucha you'd like. But, you know, nowadays it's a major market seller. It's like health beverage for some. It's made its way back into the alcohol market. Definitely very popular. But, of course, I think I want to get into a bit of the history of it, but just in case anyone is confused on what the hell we're talking about, I guess I should clarify what kombucha is.
Yes, please, Professor. What is kombucha?
Well, kombucha, simply, is a fermented tea, usually black or green tea. So it's just made from tea, sugar, bacteria, and yeast. It has a sour, tangy, sort of musty, earthy flavor, but that flavor is often modified, some would say sort of downplayed, with the addition of fruit flavors, fruit juices, vegetables, flowers, or herbs. So you can, that's why you see all those different flavors of kombucha. You've got the base, but then it's been modified to be a little bit more appealing or have a different palate or, you know, just a variety of options. So to make it, you start by brewing your tea and then sweetening it. And then you need to add something called a SCOBY. So that's C or S-C-O-B-Y. And SCOBY stands for a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast.
Hmm. SCOBY-DOO.
I knew you were going to say that. So it's sort of the jump start for your kombucha. You put it in your sweet tea and it gets to work fermenting your sugars, producing CO2 and alcohol. You'll sometimes hear of a SCOBY by other names, like sometimes the mother or the mother mushroom, since it's like a weird sort of spongy disc when it's hydrated.
Yeah, I saw a picture of one and I thought, oh, God, I don't think I want to drink a drink that's had that floating in it.
Yeah, a lot of the more popular brands on the marketplace of kombucha are, they're unpasteurized, they're unfiltered, and you get flocculants. You get little pieces of, you know, the fermented goop. Kind of tastes like when you have a runny nose and you snort it down the back of your throat.
Did you say flocculants or flatulence?
Flocculence.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that. I've heard of the other.
missed opportunity for a fart joke. So you put your SCOBY in there, and that starts the process. You can order a SCOBY online. You can get them from people that. Yeah, you can just buy a SCOBY. They come with a little dehydrated disc. You hydrate them in more tea, and it'll start the process.
Hey, man. I'm looking to score a SCOBY. You know where I can get some good SCOBY? Yeah, there's a guy on the corner there. He's got some good SCOBY. He's had them inside his coat.
You buddy. You want a SCOBY, bro? You can also grow your own from store-bought kombucha. So if you get an unpasteurized, unfiltered kombucha, you can just add some more like sweet tea as sort of a starter, and it'll continue to ferment, and you'll grow your own little spongy disc in your... in your beverage, and you can reuse your SCOBY.
Your SCOBY out and put it in the next one, huh?
After it's done. But once you got your SCOBY in there, it'll ferment at room temperature for like 1 to 3 weeks. Then you're gonna bottle your kombucha and seal it, and that second fermentation is gonna force that CO2 so you get the proper amount of carbonation you want. I thought this was interesting. Well, we're on the subject of SCOBYs, though. Not only can you, and I like that if you are searching for information about SCOBYs, one of the first questions that pops up in Google says, can you eat it? I don't know who has had that thought. I mean, haven't seen one.
Yeah, the picture I saw.
It's a little booger burger.
No, it looks like something that's growing that's dead or something like that, like a moldy type thing or something. I don't know.
I'm not sure, but you can. Apparently you can. And it's actually apparently a popular thing to dry it and eat it. It's like a little crunchy snack. It's full of probiotics. That is the one thing. You know, I don't want to that is an active quality in kombucha that is good for you. There are probiotics, just like, you know, eating like active cultures and yogurt and stuff. So it's not completely not a health beverage. You can also, really, there's also.
So what you're saying is if you dry it and eat it, it's a SCOBY snack?
Yes. That's what he was eating the whole time. Just, I mean, they were
SCOBY snacks, right? Yeah.
That would
yeah.
make sense. Hippies love kombucha.
Hey, Scoob.
SCOBY. There even another interesting use for SCOBYs is apparently they've been like dried and like spread out and molded into like seamless textile. So there's like been like
yeah
experiments into SCOBY fashion.
Yeah, they make seamless clothing.
Yeah,
I don't even think I can visualize that in my head. Trying to figure out how you take those SCOBYs and make them into clothes, and I don't think I would feel good. Yeah, you're wearing SCOBY pants and you get caught in the rain.
Oh no!
It'd be like wearing meat. Yeah.
I don't know. They must seal it somehow.
I don't know, but I tell you what, I'd wear underwear if I had on SCOBY pants.
Well, there you go. Now, along with the like as mentioned in the fermentation process, there is some small amount of alcohol generated, but using the usual method for making kombucha, you get a very insignificant amount of alcohol, like 0.5% alcohol. So not enough to, you'd have to drink an absurd amount of kombucha. I don't think you could drink enough of 0.5% alcohol kombucha to really get a buzz, but that's not always the case. And we'll get into that later. But into the history, now that you know what it is, sort of,
sort of,
So the origins of kombucha are a bit murky, but there are a couple supposed like birthplaces for it. The most believable is ancient China. I mean, China was kind of the first in fermenting things. They were there's evidence of like fermented tea in jars that dates back to like 2020 BC. A possible origin story says that it was first brewed by Emperor Qin Shi Huangdi for the myriad health benefits. It was revered as the cure for immortality. I'm assuming that means like it provides you immortality, not like it fixes immortality.
It kills you.
This is not like a problem.
Yeah.
That can happen, actually, and there have been some cases of that when you improperly brew your kombucha. There are some deaths associated with kombucha, unfortunately.
Huh. Well, that's not good.
Well, when you're fermenting anything, you can get other bacteria in there that are bad for you. So if you're fermenting anything, safety, cleanliness, you know, sanitary conditions, always important. But I don't think that's what the Emperor of China used it for. I think it was just, you know, it was believed to be kind of a cure-all. You know, it provided longevity, it provided health, it provided just everything you needed. From there, it was thought to have migrated to Korea and then to Japan and then sort of outwards to the rest of Europe, specifically caught on in like Russia and Germany. The part where it goes from Korea to Japan is interesting because this is sort of where we get into the name itself. Because as I mentioned, of course, fermented tea was around in China, but it wasn't called kombucha at that time. There's no record of it ever being called kombucha in its origin. That its name there, like the first recorded names there, have sort of more along the line with like the emperor naming it for what it did for you. You know, we have like turn of the century names like colloquially called like haibao, which is stomach gift, or weibao, which is sea gift. So just sort of like a gift from the sea, or, you know, a gift for your stomach. And then in more modern times in China, it was referred as like, you know, red bacteria tea. In translation, a red tea or red mushroom tea. So just sort of not kombucha. In fact, you'll find things that sound sort of like kombucha in China called kangpucha, but that's the Chinese translation of kombucha back for their marketplace because it's so popularly known as kombucha. So how did the Chinese beverage get a sort of Japanese sounding name in the European marketplace? Well, maybe from a Korean doctor.
Makes sense.
Stick with me. So the story goes, a Korean doctor by the name of Kombu brought kombucha to Japan. And the Japanese are so enamored with it that they named it after him. So in Japanese, ocha is tea, but really cha, that means tea. So kombucha would have just been this doctor's tea. Now, this is the sort of fanciful story, but some elements don't add up. For one, kombu is not a known Korean surname. Two, kombucha already translates to something in Japanese, kombu being a type of seaweed, as you mentioned, it kind of reminds you of seaweed, and cha meaning tea. And there was already a type of tea that existed like that. There was already kombucha in Japan. It was made from dehydrated kombucha powder and hot water. And then third, the Japanese don't call kombucha kombucha. They call it kocha kinoko, or like red fermented tea, similar to what the Chinese call it now. So where did kombucha as the name come from? Well, there is this little bit of recorded evidence in the historical scrolls of Japan that there was definitely a Korean doctor that came through around like the 400 BC time period, and his name was Kamuha, and he brought a lot of knowledge of health benefits. So it's possible that there was sort of an origin there that they called Kamuha Kamucha, so once again the doctor's tea, and it just became a name for it that spread to surrounding areas. And then from there it went to Russia and Germany, where they called it kombucha and kombucha schwam respectively. So definitely they were working off the name kombucha long before it got to America. We're talking early 20th century. So possible origins from a doctor, maybe just a misunderstanding of kombucha, the seaweed tea, and then looking at the tea and seeing the slimy things in it, and the Europeans thinking oh, it's made of seaweed. That's a Japanese tea called kombucha. It's hard to say.
Well, there's a whole bunch of different choices. So whichever one fits your idea of what it might be, then just go with it.
Yeah. So somehow we got the name kombucha. But in any case, World War II led to production problems for kombucha as sugar and tea became scarce throughout Europe. But it reemerged in the 60s, especially in Switzerland, thanks to its supposed probiotic properties, similar to those that were already becoming popular in yogurt, drinkable yogurt. But it really didn't hit stateside until the 90s, kind of coinciding with a lot of the early home brewers, beer brewers in America. Mm-hmm. You had kind of the burgeoning wine makers in America. Kombucha was right there with them, sort of just a grassroots effort. People would pass around SCOBYs, would share SCOBYs. Then in 95, the first big stateside brand launch, which is GT Kombucha. It's if you have kombucha in your home grocery store, that's probably the brand you see. It's the tall, skinny bottles. They have names like Trilogy and the cute quotes on the side. And that's still the biggest brand on the marketplace.
Well, I could be wrong, but I thought that when it first they really started pushing it, marketing it in the United States, that they more or less marketed it kind of like a health drink. Oh, now, yeah. Not like medicine or anything, but it's more like along the lines of a Gatorade or something like that, or like you say, the drinkable yogurts that had probiotics in them and things like that. So they were, it wasn't just a juice to drink or something like that. They were saying that it was healthy for you.
This is sort of an odd bit of history, but it became a sort of popular go-to for people during the AIDS epidemic. Kombucha, and then also was credited with cancer too, but it became a popular thing for people to drink, something that was healthy, was supposedly full of vitamins and good things for you. Mm-hmm. And that was part of what led to its popularity, was just, as we were leaning more into holistic treatments for serious illness when there weren't things out there that we had access to. Kombucha was a very specific go-to.
Mm-hmm.
But the market continued to expand massively throughout the early 2000s. In fact, I remember it kind of, being a thing I was introduced to when I moved to New York in the early 2000s. And it hit a very important snag in 2010, So I mentioned that kombucha has a negligible amount of alcohol. Well, apparently some of those early brands on the marketplace were being sort of negligent about how negligible the alcohol was.
And when you're negligent about being negligible, that means you have some.
Exactly. So, you know, there was like a test done on some on-the-shelf bottles, and there were bottles of kombucha. It was specifically like the GT brand that were clocking in like 3-4% alcohol, which is in the range of just drinking a beer. So, you know, you think you're being super healthy, you're having maybe 2 or 3 kombuchas a day, drinking the same amount of alcohol as if you're having 2 or 3 beers. And in response, a bunch of grocery stores like voluntarily pulled kombucha from the shelves, specifically the GT brand, and the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau had to get involved and make rules for regulating kombucha. So basically, kombucha had to have less than 0.5 alcohol in it to be on just regular like store shelves. It had to be labeled for the alcohol content, and if it had above a, you know, just as much as with regular alcohol, it could only be sold to people over 21. And
yeah.
It had to be labeled as that. And if you didn't have an alcohol license, you couldn't sell kombucha that was not properly labeled as that.
Well, and that kind of planted the idea in some of them, too. They started making sort of an overproof kombucha and making them with 5 and 6% because I thought, maybe there's a market out there for that.
It took a minute. You know, when everything happened, there was a bit of a backlash for like this, oh no, this beverage that's been on our shelves and our kids have been drinking it and it's high alcohol. And there was even this like scandalous story about how Lindsay Lohan had triggered her bracelet that was supposed to be monitoring her alcohol consumption because she was drinking a kombucha. So it wasn't her fault she was drinking kombucha. So this all this stuff in the press, this sort of, you know, like scare tactics in the press actually did not hurt kombucha sales. It massively helped it. So there was like a 2-month period, yeah, where all these brands, these big brands were off the shelves. These little brands were allowed space on the shelves, so that helped them get known. But then also then when the big brands came back, that's when you saw like GT reformulated. So we're like, okay, fine. Here's our kombucha that has 0.5 alcohol. We've removed any alcohol over what's allowed. But then also here's our brand that has more alcohol in it. You can get that. Like these are the ones that are naturally fermented up to 3%, 4%. And then when those did well, you're absolutely right. And like, you know, more recently, like in the last like 5 years, you've seen hard kombucha become a big thing.
Yeah. With their sales pitch, drink kombucha like Lindsay Lohan.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I wish her all the best. I love hard kombucha. So thank you, Lindsay Lohan, for helping hard kombucha exist. But yeah, so I mean, you're like now it's kind of funny because it took me a while. I love the taste of kombucha, and I also enjoy drinking, but I always feel like I do have that, even though I know, like, scientifically there aren't any, like, massive health benefits from drinking kombucha outside of the probiotics. I feel like it's two different moods I'm in. Like, I'm healthy Taylor, I'm going to drink kombucha. And then, like, I'm garbage Taylor, I'm going to buy some beer. And then when there's kombucha beer, I'm like, what am I...
What Taylor's drinking this?
I know, but I still really like them. Sometimes they're my, because they're also, I find like they're really, they're so flavorful because you've got that heavy fermented flavor. And, you know, some of them are high alcohol, but most of them are more around like the 4 or 5. That's like a light beer range, you know.
Right.
Regular beer. But they're so filling that I actually feel like it does kind of work if I'm like, I want to be good, but not like too good. I'll buy one kombucha beer, like in a can at my bodega, and that's kind of fine. Like I'll have that and I'm like, I'm satisfied.
Well, I mean, if you're comparing them to a seltzer, at least they have a definite flavor, whereas the seltzers are like, they barely border on a flavor.
That's very true. They definitely taste like something. Some people, a lot of people don't like the taste of kombucha, which I don't know. It's like one of those things that people really want you to know.
Like, I've never really in
like feet. Like, okay, I guess I like the taste of feet then. It's good.
Well, one man's feet is another man's treasure. Oh, kombucha. I don't know.
You know what feet taste like also? I think they taste like vinegar, and I love vinegar. But I guess your foot experience outweighs my vinegar experience.
Yeah, I've never really encountered a kombucha in the wild, but I think that I would try one just because I like schnitzel, so I kind of figure it's in the same vein as that.
Well, and it's I mean, there's so many brands out there, and especially in like the hard kombucha marketplace, the flavor is, and I don't mean this in a bad way, I think it's sort of all over the place. In the same way, like when we talked about like sours or like gozas, how, you know, if you don't like one that's a little bit dry and a little too sour, there's other things in those categories that you might like. I feel like that's really what kombucha has grown to, in that there are some that are very austere, just the OG. They're very sour, they're very earthy, they're very musty. That's what they're there for. There's a lot of flocculants in them, a lot of stuff floating in them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like that, that's there. If you want something super bright and herbal and like citrusy, there are those. If you want something fruity, there are some that they mix all sorts of, like pomegranate and orange and, you know, grapefruit and all sorts of flavors in there. And those are great too.
Yeah. I have any meat flavored ones?
No, there's no meat. That would be weird.
Oh, okay. I got bacon kombucha. That sounds good.
No, please don't do. I mean, I guess I feel like those flavors would not meld. There's a lot, because bacon and vinegar doesn't sound good.
I found bacon goes with pretty much anything.
Not kombucha. Although, you know what? If you wanna make a bacon kombucha cocktail, I'm sure that someone out there would like it. So don't listen to me. So there you go. And like I said, I think kombucha is a good thing. You know, even if you just, I mean, not ignoring any health benefits, as a stand-in for me, like, if I want to have a drink, I'm like, nah, I shouldn't drink tonight. Like, you know, just better to have some nights off. Having some kombucha on hand, I feel like, always fills that void for me, because it's fermented, it's funky, it's bubbly, it's filling. And I feel like I've had something nice and kind of weird and cool. You know, it's a little bit more satisfying than just like drinking a Coke or something. For me, that's just me. But.
Well, and now we know where those SCOBY snacks came from.
Well, and you know, it's actually, speaking of Coke, I think it is Coca-Cola that has actually launched their own brand of kombucha. So it's made such an impact on the marketplace that now big brands are getting into the kombucha game.
Well, why don't they make the chuhais? If they're going to make kombuchas, then make some chuhais too.
I like that. I like that you've never had like a canned chuhai, but you're on board with this. My one complaint about the alcohol industry in America.
Well, it's mostly I would like to have one that's got the fresh lemon flavor to it, because you know I like the whiskey sour, so I'm expecting that I would like the lemon chuhai.
Dad, I hope one day we can go to Japan together and I can introduce you to the world of canned chuhai. That's all I want.
Well, all right. I will go there and drink one.
I think you'll drink more than one.
Okay.
But until then, I guess I can introduce you to the world of kombucha, because that's definitely, like, even in West Virginia, I bought kombucha in your hometown, so I know you can find it.
Well, they might have hillbilly kombucha, but
No, they have GT.
It really?
Yeah.
I was going to say, that wouldn't be seaweed that's in there.
No, well, there's no, we clarified that. There's no kombu in kombucha.
Oh, okay. It's kelp.
No, it's bacteria and yeast.
Yeah, and cellulose.
Yes, that is there. That's what makes the fashion. So, you know, you should try one.
All right. I'll try one, and then I'll try to make some pants out of one.
Well, all right. We'll see how that goes. and you can definitely cocktail with kombucha. I've had it on draft at bars before, and we've made cool cocktails, like done like kind of mule builds with kombucha instead of ginger beer. We had like a really good, like, a ginger pear kombucha that was on draft that we used to top a mule. It was really good. You can get best of both worlds.
Yeah, it'd be good and savory when it mixed with something and not too sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, you're right. It's kind of like schnitzel. It's just effervescent on its own. But yeah, it works really great as a modifier, you know.
Just anything that's survived thousands of years, it must be good.
Yeah. You can feel a little bit good about drinking it. There are some health benefits there. I'm just not going to go on record and make any claims because they're all sort of...
There are no standard studies to support any of that.
This is also not the podcast. I hope you don't come to this podcast for
nutritional information.
No, that's not. We don't do that. We're about... This is alcohol here. It's
yeah.
For you. That's the starting point. We like it anyway.
But kombucha will do less damage to your liver than most of the other things we recommend.
Probably. Who knows? all right. Well, hey, you got any final thoughts on Mother Mushroom, Dad?
No, other than, like I say, I don't think I could bring myself to eat one of those Gobi snacks.
No.
Looking at it, it just looks like a slimy, I don't know, it's got things in it that just, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it over the picture. You'd have to see the picture.
Just accepted that there are textures that other people enjoy that I don't, because there's one brand, I think it is GT, that does it's a kombucha, so it's already unpasteurized, unfiltered, that's got the kind of little bits of, I don't know what else to call them other than loogies, little slimy bits in the bottom.
Oh God, that sounds appealing.
But then it also has chia seeds in it, so you know, like hydrated chia seeds are those little slimy balls.
Yeah.
So that's, so it's both. And I used to, like, there was a job that I worked at where I religiously, like, had my bar back always went out and got, like, some snacks for himself before a shift, and he would bring me back a kombucha, and occasionally all that they had was the chia seed one, and I would choke through it because it was there. But the combination of, like, the kombucha loogies and the slimy chia seeds, like, this is for somebody, and that's totally cool. It's not for me.
I don't think I could do it. I could just see if you couldn't remember what it was called. And you say, yeah, what that drink, you know, the one with the slimy balls.
Yeah.
Excuse me, but we don't serve that here.
Not boba tea. I like boba tea, but chia seeds are a little too small. And then they've got the weird crunch on the inside. I don't know. Anyway. Hey. All right. Well, Happy New Year, Dad.
Well, Happy New Year to you, too. And we'll suffer through sober January.
Well, not. I mean, like I said, I'm doing a damp January. Not a dry.
We're doing God's work.
I don't know. I think last month we did an entire month of booze adjacent things.
We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see how far we make it.
But thank you all for joining us. Happy New Year to you all. All joking aside, it's a new year. It's 2022. Lean into it. It's going to be better. I have faith. It's got to be.
That's what we said last year.
Famous last words.
Yeah.
Hey, if you want to find us on social media, we are neattheboozecast@gmail.com. You can email us. You can ask us questions. We are neatboozecast on Instagram and Twitter. We have a Patreon if you want to support us. Check us out there. Rewards are coming back in February. We're on a little hiatus right now, but you're also not being charged for anything. So you can go. You can check out all the bonus content and new stuff coming out soon. So thanks again for listening. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And I forgot the Facebook.
I was getting ready to throw it in there.
I saw the look on your face. I'm so sorry.
I was going,
I know. And we got Facebook. Tell them Facebook.
Neat the Boozecast group. There you go. Got that important bit of information in there. So join us on Facebook. Yeah.
They post pictures of their drinks and the things that they do. And it's really cool. It's really nice.
Yeah. They'll make pictures of their chia pet kombuchas.
Yes.
Chia seed kombuchas.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, who are you?
Yeah. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Me... Give me one of those. discs of goo to chew on too.
For big kombucha.
Big kombucha.